So last week, the day before Valentine's Day, we looked at love and what it is based on some verses from 1 Corinthians 13. Real love is so important and it shines through in the wake of so much false love. It's one thing knowing what love is and having all the theory. It's another putting it into practice. I'm sure people have got master's degrees and even PhDs on love, probably. But whether they can put it into practice, I don't know. I'm sure, like me, you've met or even worked with people who are brilliant, theoretically, but in practice they can't actually put things together or do things. We need people that have great intelligence, but we also need people who can apply it. We must not minimise or belittle the theory, but we do need to be those people who can put things into practice. I still think too much emphasis is put on knowing and learning rather than doing, even in Christian circles, where it seems more and more jobs that are advertised list the amount of degrees and qualifications you have to have rather than the calling. We need to be able to put things into practice. I'm sure God isn't bothered about paperwork. It's just everyone else that's bothered about it. He wants to see the practical application. Yesterday I went to meet our son and pick up Caleb, and I thought, oh, I've got a CD in the glove compartment. Nobody else in the car, I'll put it on. And I've no idea whether any of you heard of Malcolm and Alwyn, 1970s about, I think. And it's one of their albums called Fool's Wisdom. And as I was listening along, one track came on, and some of the words talking about Jesus said, he didn't go to college to study for words that rhyme. He wouldn't waste his time. He just said it like it is. We need to make sure that we follow Jesus' example. And you may well have heard it said that if Jesus was the minister of a church, he'd probably get the sack because people wouldn't want to follow exactly what he was thinking we ought to do. I'm sure God isn't bothered. He wants that practical application. And when I think of people that I've met over the years, with no disrespect to any of these jobs that have come off building sites and out of factories and even been ex-prisoners and become very effective followers of Christ. And some of them have become ministers. I remember meeting one who he wondered whether he was the only ex-prisoner who was a Baptist minister. But he was working in an estate on the London area, which was the biggest estate at that time in Britain. The population of the estate was 70,000. And he was working in amongst these people, and he said, some of them I can relate to very well, because they're doing things I used to do. He had the experience, as it were, and the practical know-how to relate to those people. And others who've worked in situations where if they hadn't had the background they had, they just wouldn't have been able to understand the people and draw alongside them. As followers of Jesus, we must demonstrate his love in any way we can, which, as we said last week, can be hard and is not something the church generally has done well during history. There are obviously examples of where they have, and examples of where they haven't. Perhaps prime examples of things where the church have failed would be something like the Crusades, where they thought they were going to impart sort of take Christianity, but ended up being these wars and everything else and all that happened. As you know, Catherine and myself looked at joining WEC International, as they're known today, Worldwide Evangelization for Christ. But originally they were called just WEC, and WEC standed for Worldwide Evangelization Crusade. But they changed their name because of the connotations with the Crusades, and it had negative connotations. But originally founded by C.T. Studd, he was a determined man desperate to win the lost for Christ by all means. And it seems that if you read his biography and everything else, he wasn't the most tactful of people. If he thought something had to be done, it was done. And he didn't really consider what other people thought about it. Even it seems as the sacrifice of his family life, because he went off to be a missionary in India and Africa and to look at these various places, but his wife and children stayed at home. And, he'd come back every, few years or so, whatever, just to see, and he got criticised for that, and you might share that criticism. But it seems that he went and he's sort of left behind this mission organisation, which I don't know whether it still is, but a few years ago when we were looking at joining it, was the biggest mission organisation in the world. Although a lot of people don't seem to have heard about it, because it isn't attached to any particular denomination. It's just an independent, interdenominational mission. And as I say, when you read his biography, you get a glimpse of what he was like. And it seems that he did anything to achieve the goal. And as I say, it changed its name from Crusade to Worldwide Evangelization for Christ, because the people at the time when it was changed felt there were so many negative connotations. But it still carries out its original mission, its original aim, to reach the unreached people for Christ. And although they work in countries where Christ is known, they still look for those opportunities to go to places where Christ is not known. And when we were there, you would sometimes hear that, they couldn't tell people where people were working. It wasn't advertised where they were, because it was too dangerous for that to become public knowledge. And there's often been a hardness. Even in my younger days, it seemed everything was black and white. As a Christian, you did this or you didn't do that. And you didn't ask why, you were just told. You don't do that and you do this. And people just didn't sort of seem to. And in one sense, it made it so much easier, because you didn't have to think about it, did you? You just followed the rules. You don't do this and you do that. I remember a church that my brother and his wife went to. They happened to mention to somebody that they'd been to. I don't know what they'd done, but they'd been somewhere. And this couple said, "Oh, what did the minister think about that?" And they said, "What do you mean, what did the minister think? He doesn't know." So, well, you should have asked him before you went. So, whenever you go anywhere, if you want to just let me know and we'll see. But it was that sort of church where the leadership basically governed what the people did. And in one sense, we need to be accountable to one another. And we need to be open. But it seems that people who did make mistakes were treated very harshly. And I can think of some examples in my childhood where I don't understand the ins and outs, but I know people were treated harshly, and there seemed to be a lack of love in the way that decisions were made and sanctions imposed. And again, there was a church in Sambach, whether it's still there, called the Light and Life Fellowship. And they were basically part of the traveller movement. And they had this church, and a couple of people that I met or spoke to and said, you know, do you get a good congregation? He said, well, it depends where people are. We might have, said one Sunday, we might have a dozen or 20. Next Sunday, if people have moved in the area, we might have 120. He said, we don't know week to week, but they're from the traveller community. But I used to have to walk past the church. Well, it was one of the ways to go past the church to get to the Baptist church from where we lived. And on a Sunday evening particularly, you would have people hanging round the fence and everything. And as you walk by, they would sort of say, where are you going? Why don't you come in here? You need to hear about Jesus. And this sort of thing. And they got to know me, and they would just say, oh, God bless you, sir, as you go off and preach the word. And that was it. But one Sunday night, I was walking down one of the streets towards the church, and there was what I knew was one of the leaders with a young man. And obviously, this young man had done something. I have no idea what it was. But the minister was explaining to him what was going to happen during the service, how he was going to be brought up the front, because they were talking loudly enough for me to hear. And he said, and you will just stand there and you will be... So what he'd done and what the discipline was, I don't know. But they were meeting out some discipline. I hope it was done with love. But so many times it wasn't done with love. A lack of love in those decisions that were made. And I'm sure we've all been guilty of that. But as we sang last week, let there be love shared among us. Let there be love in our eyes. May now your love join us together. And as it was said of the early Christians, one of the things they were accused of, in one sense, was see how they love one another. And again, is that said with people, say, but if a Baptist church, sometimes, well, where is it? Even though we're in the high, well, not the high street. If we're in the high street, we're in the wrong place, aren't we? We're in Mill Street, but we're here. And we used to get it in Bilston. When we moved there, there was the leisure centre, the health centre, then the Baptist church. And people seemed to know where the leisure centre was and where the health centre was. But, well, where's the Baptist church? Well, it's the big building next to the health centre. Oh, yeah, you know, and you have a sign up saying Baptist church and everything else. But people just don't know. But if they hear about it, do they say, well, yeah, that is a place where people love one another. People may not agree with us and what we do, but do they recognise the love of Christ in our lives and that the love comes from God? In the reading David brought to us from 1 John, it was entitled in my Bible, Love One Another. And in one sense, most of this letter that John wrote is about love. Before this third chapter, John talks of God's love. And then in chapter 4, he says more. And because of the love that God has for us, that we should love one another. And that true love comes from God. True love is a result of having God within our lives. And God demonstrated his love for us by sending Jesus. Jesus demonstrated his love for us by dying on the cross for our sins. The commitment, the unconditional love, the love in action. As John says in verse 16, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Jesus actually gave his life for us, the ultimate sacrifice. And there may be an occasion when we need to be prepared to do the same. Coming back to WEC again, when you joined WEC, you had to sign a form about some of the conditions and what their values were. You agreed with their values and everything else. But there was a line in there that said that you were willing to lay down your life for Christ. Because of the places, the countries that some of the missionaries would be going, it was an actual reality for some of them. And, you know, as we came to the end of that course and some of the people we were with that signed up, they said, you know, when you read that and you're going to sign it, it does make you think a bit. am I really prepared to lay down my life for others? And as I think we mentioned before, that in one of the rooms in the headquarters, there were pictures of missionaries around the wall, people who had given their life for Christ. And so you couldn't get away from it, the reality of it. And it's that commitment that C.T. Studd demonstrated and expected of his followers. And, you know, one of his well-known sayings is, if Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him. To give our all for him is a demonstration of the love that we have for him and for others. In reality, most of us will not be called upon to give our lives in that way, but we are called upon to show love that count and count the cost, putting others first, being prepared to do things that we may not want to do because it will help and support others, because it will show God's love to them. As we sang in that song, you know, about journeying together and being part of it. And sometimes each one of us needs people to come alongside. None of us are immune when we, you know, that we don't need that support. But are we prepared to do that? As I was preparing this sermon, I noticed an email had dropped into the inbox, so I thought I'd have a look at it, and it started, Dear Adrian, I don't know whether you'll remember me. So that's always a good start, isn't it? You know, whether you're... And basically, I do remember the person. He was a lay preacher in Somerset when we were in Stokes and Gregory back in late 90s, early 2000s. But he's retired and lives in Exeter now. And he's a part of a... And he's helping out with the pastoral side of that church in his retirement. And basically, the email was to tell me that he'd been supporting a young man, and that this young man had been moved to Biddeford, and they were finding it difficult to maintain the contact, so would I consider sort of taking up some of the contact? And of course, being a minister, my first reaction was, oh great, this is something I can do. But I'll be honest with you, I thought, oh dear, something else, you know, to pick up. And then you sort of go back to your, then you go back to your sermon and you think, what am I writing about? What am I preparing? God's timing sometimes is, well, sometimes, is always impeccable. And I just thought, you know, he said he was going on holiday and could I get back to him when he got back from holiday about this? So anyway, that's something that we will be journeying on, or I will be journeying on, and just see where it goes in supporting this this man and see what happens. But it is being prepared, not because of what we can get out of it, as it were, but being prepared to help and support others and put ourselves out and to show God's love to them. It's where the rubber meets the road, as they say, God's love in action. We all have opportunity to do things. It may not take much to make a big impression, and we don't do it in the sense to make an impression. We do it because it helps. And laying down our life does not necessarily mean being prepared to die, but it does mean being prepared to do whatever God asks us to do and whatever he wants us to do, not counting the cost. Ultimately, the rewards will outweigh the cost, but we probably won't get them this side of heaven when we meet with him. John went on to say in this in 1 John chapter 3, if anyone has material possessions, sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? It may not require time and effort. It may be providing material help or giving to such things as we are with the Afghan appeal, just supporting and doing what we can. We realistically something like Afghanistan, we can't go there. But we can help support those who are there and are helping. And we can do that in whatever way God prompts us to do it, because ultimately we're answerable to nobody but God and how we do things and what we do. And he knows. And verse 18 and 19 says, "Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. This is how we know we belong to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence." Actions show that we've learnt the lessons and are applying them as they should be. It's not a, in one sense, it's not a, people will say, oh, well, it's just a sporting analogy, so it doesn't matter. And in a lot of sense, it doesn't. But I remember years ago, I don't know when it would have been, probably late 70s or something, I was watching, I think it was the Olympic Games, and it was 5 or 10,000 meters, and there was somebody who was the favourite to win that race. And within the first couple of laps, I don't think it was deliberately, but he got tripped up and he fell. And the commentator said, oh, that's probably the end of his chances. But then he said, look, one of his teammates, one person, although it was an individual race, one of the men in the race from his country stopped and helped him to his feet. And the two of them, quite a long way behind the rest, ran together. And as the laps went by, they started to catch the group. And then they caught the group. And because he was such a good runner, he actually went on to win the gold medal. And all the talk afterwards was about the fact, would he have done that if his teammate hadn't stopped and run with him? And how much was his, you know, his teammate who finished nowhere in the sense of medals or anything? I wonder what sort of credit he got. But if it hadn't been for him, he wouldn't have got it. And in life, we don't need the credit, but there are times, I'm sure, when we've helped people or when we've gone alongside or we've done things. It's like people say, you know, how many people know who it was who led Billy Graham to Christ? Most people have heard of Billy Graham, but not many people remember Mordecai Ham, who was a local evangelist taking meetings that Billy Graham attended when he gave his life to Christ. But if he hadn't been faithful to God, maybe Billy Graham wouldn't have become a Christian, although I'm sure in God's plan somehow he would have done. But it was Mordecai Ham who was the evangelist who preached the words that spoke to Billy Graham and made him commit his life to Christ. We are all important and we can all do our bit. Actions show that we've learnt the lessons, that we can put them into practice, and when we apply them, they show that we are following God. There was an article I saw in the Baptist Union send out an email every few weeks just with news and items. And in this week's email, there was a reflection from a minister on love. He was reflecting on love. And he said that he had been invited to or was part of a discussion group that had members from various organisations in the town he was with who worked mainly with under 25s who had problems in the town. And they worked and they had all sorts of plans and procedures in place. And he said there was much discussion about these strategies and programmes. And as the discussion went on, it seemed that most of them weren't working. And after they'd been discussing for quite a while, it got to the point where they agreed these plans and strategies weren't working, and that really what these people needed was love. But then at this point, he said it seemed as though they reached the conclusion they needed love, weren't sure how to show love, shrugged their shoulders and left. At the end of the article, in honesty, he concludes, "I cannot pretend I have the answers or often the desire to explore these questions, but neither am I comfortable sitting in a room with good people and recognizing that it is only love that can help the weakest and wounded, and then shrugging our collective shoulders and walking away." And as a church, we need to make sure that we don't shrug our shoulders, as it were, but we do what we can. And that doesn't have to be something collective, because we're all representatives. It's like when I was at Bible College, we did this urban studies course where we were in Newcastle upon Tyne for 2 weeks and did all sorts of things. And I remember a minister coming to speak to us about being minister of an inner city church and the things that happened and the things that went on. And he said one day he arrived at church in the middle of the week to find one of his church members there, very agitated. And they then told him a story about how they had been going through Newcastle, and they met somebody who'd asked if they could help by getting them some food. And he said, "So I rang you, and you weren't in. And I rang one of the other leaders, and they weren't in. So I brought them down to church, and there was nobody here." He said, "So in the end," he said, "I had to get them some food." He said, "The church ought to be doing something about it." And the minister just looked at him and said, "Well, it sounds like the church did." And he said, "Well, you're a member of the church, and you helped them. So the church actually did something. We can do things as individuals. We can do things collectively. We need to show love, and it's love that comes from God, because God is love, as John says. And we all have the opportunity, whether it is as individuals or whether it is as a collective, to show love. All we need to do is to be available to God and listen to his promptings. And nobody else needs to know about what we do. We just need to do it. And by doing it, then we can impact people for God. And as that first song says, we can contribute to healing our land and to being there and to being his people. So we talked about love last week and what it was. Hopefully this week we've talked a bit more about what we can do to put it into action and be encouraged to put it into action, so that people might know God's presence and might know his love, and we might be able to help him. We just need to be available. And as we've said before, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. So may we allow him to equip us as we are available. And as we sing our closing hymn, which says, "Here I am."